Chapter 65. As the evening drew on, Karenin and those who were about him went up upon the roof of the buildings, so that they might the better watch the sunset, and the flushing of the mountains, and the coming of the afterglow. They were joined by two of the surgeons from the laboratories below, and presently by a nurse who brought Karenin refreshment in a thin glass cup. It was a cloudless, windless evening under the deep blue sky, and far away to the north glittered two biplanes on the way to the observatories on Everest, 200 miles distant over the precipices to the east. The little group of people watched them pass over the mountains and vanish into the blue, and then for a time they talked of the work that the observatory was doing. From that they passed to the whole process of research about the world, and so Karenin's thoughts returned again to the mind of the world and the great future that was opening upon man's imagination. He asked the surgeons many questions upon the detailed possibilities of their science, and he was keenly interested and excited by the things they told him. And as they talked, the sun touched the mountains, and became very swiftly a blazing and indented hemisphere of liquid flame and sank. Karenin looked blinking at the last quivering rim of incandescence, and shaded his eyes and became silent. Presently he gave a little start. "What?" asked Rachel Borken. "I had forgotten," he said. "What had you forgotten?" "I had forgotten about the operation tomorrow. I have been so interested as man today, that I have nearly forgotten Marcus Karenin. Marcus Karenin must go under your knife tomorrow, Fowler, and very probably Marcus Karenin will die." He raised his slightly shriveled hand. "It does not matter, Fowler. It scarcely matters even to me. For indeed is it Karenin who has been sitting here and talking? Is it not rather a common mind, Fowler, that has played about between us? You and I and all of us have added thought to thought, but the thread is neither you nor me. What is true we all have, when the individual has altogether brought himself to the test and winnowing of expression, then the individual is done. I feel as though I had already been emptied out of that little vessel, that Marcus Karenin, which in my youth held me so tightly and completely. Your beauty, dear Edith, and your broad brow, dear Rachel, and you, Fowler, with your firm and skillful hands, are now almost as much to me as this hand that beats the arm of my chair, and as little me. And the spirit that desires to know, the spirit that resolves to do, that spirit that lives, and has talked in us today, lived in Athens, lived in Florence, lives on, I know, forever. And you, old sun, with your sword of flame searing these poor eyes of Marcus for the last time of all, beware of me. You think I die, and indeed I am only taking off one more coat to get at you. I have threatened you for 10,000 years, and soon I warn you I shall be coming. When I am altogether stripped and my disguises thrown away. Very soon now, old son, I shall launch myself at you, and I shall reach you and I shall put my foot on your spotted face, and tug you about by your fiery locks. One step I shall take to the moon, and then I shall leap at you. I've talked to you before, old son, I've talked to you a million times, and now I am beginning to remember. Yes, long ago, before I had stripped off a few thousand generations, just now and forgotten, I was a hairy savage, and I pointed my hand at you, and clearly I remember it. I saw you in a net. Have you forgotten that, old son? Old son, I gather myself together out of the pools of the individual that have held me dispersed so long. I gather my billion thoughts into science, and my million wills into a common purpose. Well may you slink down behind the mountains from me, well may you cower. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.